The Snowman by Wallace Stevens. One must have a mind of winter to regard the frost and the boughs of the pine trees crusted with snow, and have been cold a long time to behold the junipers shagged with ice, the spruces rough in the distant glitter of the January sun, and not to think of any misery in the sound of the wind, in the sound of a few leaves, which is the sound of the land full of the same wind that is blowing in the same bare place. For the listener who listens in the snow, and nothing himself beholds, nothing that is not there, and the nothing that is. That was The Snowman by Wallace Stevens. How do I loathe thee? Let me count the ways. I loathe thee to the heights of the icy drifts that quite obscured my car, so the snowplow crushed it like a cube. I loathe thee when the rugs lift up around the door and leave a sift of sandy snow, when thy northernmost winds do blow. Actually, until they became so, well, irrational, most of us in northern climes probably did love, or at least appreciate, or like, the lovely ermine frock that falls upon us here as early as October. Many of us recall pulling coaster wagons full of trolls and fairies and pac-men and leaving ruts behind us instead of tracks and lovely leaves as we took our kids trick-or-treating. Now, where the Mind's Eye riders live, we've twice broken century-old records for snowfall and cold, over 100 inches in 2007 and, oh, it's too cold to talk about it, 2008. But we are here to praise the shovel, not to seize it. Listen up, you listeners in the snow, while we blow past the negative and accentuate the positive in today's Mind's Eye radio program, How I Quit Loathing the Cold and Learn to Embrace Winter. Increasingly, people the world over are heeding the call to leave a smaller carbon footprint. So what if a guy decides to leave no footprint at all, but rather a wavering line through the white? Our guy Thorvaldsen does just that in Winter Biking.
In the smudged light of a mid-January morning, the only sounds are my heaving breath and the styrofoam squeak and crunch of frozen-packed snow beneath the stiff tires of my bike. Over the three-mile ride to work, other winter bike commuters pass, flashing lights fastened to handlebars, bike helmets, backpacks. Our eyes meet, heads nod. We pass without a word. We are dressed like heavyweight ninjas. In another place and time, our masked, balaclavaed faces, puffing quick clouds of breath, would perhaps raise alarm, a death squad of bicycling terrorists, hearkening back to the early days of the IRA, a ragtag army on arseless horses. But strapped to our backs and riding in panniers are not guns, but the weaponry of making a living. Briefcases, books, dry shoes, a stick of deodorant, and packed lunches. Our bikes themselves are a sorry lot, wide, tired beaters, ones that we don't mind muddying up, demoted to being ignobly eaten away by salt and grit and rust. Today, it's brutally cold, but I'd put money on none of us knows the actual temperature. Once you convince yourself that 5 degrees below zero is too cold, it becomes that. It's better not to know, to consider too deeply that we might truly be a bit cracked, masochistic, recklessly inviting colds and shoulder-dislocating wipeouts. When people ask how do I manage it, stave off frostbite, I tell them it's all about the clothes. Through trial and torturous error, I employ a bizarre combination of scarves, windbreakers, gloves, and flight helmets to plug the vulnerable gaps. At one time, I owned a pair of beaver skin mittens that reached almost to my elbows. Regrettably, I lost them, and I've yet to visit wherever it is they use such gear to replace them. The trick to winter biking is keeping out the biting air, but not to overdo it. Being too cozy warm when you begin, and you'll be a sweating mess by the end of your ride. The first half mile should be a bit chilly, a slow warm-up. And herein lies the secret bonus of winter commuter biking. It's twice as much work, not dissimilar to walking in sand, but it saves you from having to go to the gym. A mile in snow is worth three on blacktop. If you're worried about the state of your hair when you arrive at work, this is not your mode of transport. Bike helmets are no friends of product-enhanced pompadours and coiffed dews. Early morning showers aren't a particularly good idea either. Not only does a wet head invite severe headaches when encountering the cold, but by the time you arrive, you're sweaty anyhow, hence the deodorant in the panniers. But once you've ignored the 4 fresh inches of snow, successfully negotiated your head for the car resistance, maneuvered the bike out of the garage, past the snow shovels and snow blowers, and hit the somewhat open road, there is nothing like it. A part of the pleasure is derived from a smug, albeit hidden grin, you give to those poor suckers scraping off their car windows. And then later, while they breathe stale, recycled air of the frozen confines of their car, you take in air that's traveled the breadth of Canada to fill your lungs. And for many of us, a childish joy is found in the delicate edge of riding on ice. Hold on too tight, and you're down before it's even considered. Body, bike, bags, a tangled winter sculpture in a snowbank. Too loose, same result. The trick is in the letting go, but staying focused. Loosen your grip on the handlebars, track the previous rider's snaking trail, and allow the minor alterations to waver and wobble you without a fight. It also requires a delicate touch on the brakes, and in deep snow, using your legs like outriggers, at the ready to push you back up to vertical. Then it's just you and the measured gathering of midwinter light, the peach blush of sun rising in snow clouds, the fresh white powder softening the hard-edged world, blending together yards and streets and tree limbs. It's the hum of a body awakening, befriending what we normally cringe against. It's saying good morning to the newly christened world without words, but with a wordless pleasure. It's the startle of a red cardinal against a bleached-out landscape. It's the lattice work of tree limbs, passed slow enough to kaleidoscope the deepening blue sky behind. This is Guy Thorvaldsen for Mind's Eye Radio.
You know how, when you have a toothache, it's sometimes necessary and possible to avoid the pain by concentrating on something else? Gay Davidson-Zilski performs the trick by simply incorporating the pleasure with the pain.
How to Love Winter, Winter Moon. The winter moon did not know it was beautiful. The most lovely things never do. One tiny snowflake had fallen early, then another, etc. Like errors. They proliferate until it is all mistake. But soon the lake vanished in the whirl, and spidery skiers slipped down the golf course moguls like crabs in the sea snow deep down. The best thing about winter is none of these, however. It is not the things of nature, but rather the avoidance, the potlucks and parties and conversations. Today a driver had a long sign language conversation with me, making the rolling finger crazy sign when I skidded to a stop in front of him rather than run a light. I could have been offended, but but tried to use my own Tarzan talk to clue him in that to run it was more dangerous on ice than to stop. We both laughed, and he turned. When I'm afraid of the weird wind chill depth, I knit, and today I knitted some doorstop warmers and part of a sweater. Then I knitted a palm tree and some sand, a pitcher of lemonade, and a tanned young man to lounge beside me. Some of this is true. This is how I love the winter. These and the moon ringed by rainbow against the cut glass stars. This is Gay Davidson-Zelsky saying, I got you, winter. I own you. For Mind's Eye Radio.
Madison poet Judith Zuckerman.
In this poem, What I Love About Winter, I mention a CSA farm. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture Farm, in which members buy a share and they get a weekly package of vegetables and some fruit all through the growing season. What I love about winter. The full moon in January shines in early morning darkness. My boots' footprints stamp a new path in freshly fallen snow as I walk down the driveway to fetch the newspaper. A hint of dawn rises through barren branches. My deep purple coat almost reaches the sidewalk with hidden pockets to hold my treasures close to me. My hood keeps me warm even when I rush outside before my hair dries after exercising. I warm a cup of milk with Ghirardelli chocolate and cocoa. Sprinkle in brown sugar, pour it into the mug with four dancing women. My head rests on a flannel-covered pillow while I snuggle under a mound of blankets, a blue and purple spread made by a friend. For my evening meal, I fill my bowl with homemade soup. Lentils, navy beans, onions, mushrooms, carrots, grated sweet potatoes, brown rice, green pepper, and green beans, frozen fresh from our CSA farm. Turmeric, cumin, salt, pepper, soy sauce, and water. Parsley from the plant in the bedroom window. For dessert, I love opening strawberries, organic berries Jay and I picked in nearby farmers' fields and froze in June. I sink my teeth into summer sweetness. I love riding the Badger bus to Milwaukee, avoiding winter driving to Redbird Studio for a writer's roundtable, enjoying half my time napping, half in world of words. I cherish sitting for hours in my favorite library, working on my manuscript, sometimes falling into a story, forgetting time until hours have flown by. From the empty classroom window, I delight in watching kindergartners, first and second graders play on snow mountains at recess. I peek into my grandson's box of work, read what he wrote in his kindergarten book of poems. Walking with my lifelong partner, we wend our way through thigh-high snow on streets with no cars that no plows reached yet. We drink hot cocoa in the lobby before seeing new film Milk at our neighborhood movie theater. This is Judith Zuckerman for Mind's Eye Radio.
This is a found moment from Fran Rawl, a true story of a walk with her friend in March. She's inclined to look on the bright side, which is sweet, but can be somewhat inaccurate and wishful. Here's Fran's poem.
Remnants. The grizzled piles squat stubbornly along the roads like granite erratics left here by the glaciers. Said a friend, "Well, you know, these March winds will soon melt all that old snow." And I thought, maybe, but it's going to take a lot to shift those babies. This is Fran Rawl for Mind's Eye Radio.
Kathy Dodd Minor is one of those people that Henry James would applaud. Observing the subtle minutiae of a winter snowstorm, she is one of those upon whom nothing is lost.
One of my favorite writers, Annie Dillard, has written about those moments when you see the world differently, more vividly, than during the ordinary hours. In her book Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, she speaks of the tree with the lights in it, aflame with loveliness. I've had moments like that. Just a walk in winter. Eat your heart out, Annie Dillard. Tree? Tonight the air had lights in it. At about 8:30, I went out for a walk in the falling snow. Swathed and scarved against the cold, I walked up Monroe Street to the far entrance to Wingra Park, then took the angle path across the playground toward the frozen lake. All was quiet. There was a pinkish glow at the horizon that I'm sure wasn't from any natural light source, but I found it pretty anyway. I continued through the Bur Oak Grove, skirting and then entering a line of white cedars. The snow was that dry, feathery kind that dusts the ground with glitter. I walked along the wooded trail, enjoying the crystalline stillness, past the great peeling sycamore and the fortress tree and the stone council ring, then cut over to the nearby paved bike path. At the Glenway Street light, I crossed and headed uphill. About six blocks later, the magic happened. I was approaching a streetlight. I stopped for a moment to watch snowflakes swirl around the lamp, and suddenly I noticed something. They weren't all falling at the same rate. The ones nearer to me seemed to be falling more slowly than the ones right under the light. Not only that, but though there was no discernible wind, they didn't just drift straight down. Sometimes they moved sideways and even upwards. Tiny swirls and currents, too subtle for me to feel, were revealed by the snowfall patterns. I felt as if I were standing inside one of those souvenir plastic globes, and someone had just given it a really good shake. And then something else hit me. Snowflakes sparkle on the way down, too, not just after they land. Right around the light, they just looked white or gray, but about halfway down, still airborne, still dancing, they began to catch the light and reflect it back, creating a thousand shimmers as they fell. I focused on the flakes nearer to me. They, too, twinkled against the darkness. The very air was spangled, and I'd never known it until now. I stood transfixed for a little while, then ran breathless from streetlight to streetlight all the way home, mining for diamonds, testing whether my wonderful discovery held from block to block. Yes! The air was filled with miniature falling stars, and it will be every snowy night for the rest of my life. Walking with diamonds on the soles of my boots, this is Kathy Miner for Mind's Eye Radio.
Of all those wintry months, it is roundly agreed that January, which along with February are the deadliest months, is the one we love to hate the most. It has New Year's Day, sometimes an inauguration, and the Super Bowl. But I mean, who can be sustained by that paucity? Answer, Louise Mancuso.
It's winter, and I'm on my second cold already. The first one was just like runny nose and constant blowing, and I was saying how I didn't even have a sore throat, so that was pretty good. That wasn't too bad. But then, about 4 or 5 days later, the sore throat came. So here are my tips on how to survive January mornings in Wisconsin. You need to be buried under 2 sheets, 4 blankets, 1 Hawaiian motifed comforter, and turn from time to time into the warmth of the space heater body of your partner. You need to sip cups of steaming hot chocolate, cafe au lait, or chai tea. Consume bowls of raisin oatmeal with dark brown sugar and maybe berries with cream on top. Watch from inside those full, fluffed flakes coming down lazy. This is Louise Mancuso for Mind's Eye Radio.
Breather. We return from the tropics with relief. Where there is no winter, there's constant heat. Nature bogged down in urgent libido, moving wet green, begetting yet more green, as though the hot sex scene we expected is here, and 20 minutes later is here, and is here, for the rest of the film, which we realize in time is endless, a loop, a great buy, but we grow sweaty, tired, even bored. Snow is winter's overwhelming argument, cool and sensible. Here, put this on, it says. Take a breather. Winter, the lake. The day the lake freezes, the morning is filled with ghosts. Thin and wispy from the surface, they are the last reminiscence of summer. They are the first sign. In the late morning, I hear a sweet tinny sound, the tinkling of bells on a cat's collar. Ice bits wander to the shoreline. Through the hours, it echoes louder along miles of edges. Lone gulls, late or lost, stand on floats broken free from the shore. Their cries are thin ribbons, frail in the darkening air. Through the sifting of dusk, the masses of ice move and touch. Beneath the blind eye of a winter moon, there is a flatness and a stillness like sleep. I wake in the night and strain to hear. It is nothing. It is only the absence of waves. Small something and almost. Begin with this bird feeder I fill without thinking. A little house, glass and rough cedar, a pattern of black and white millet abstract inside. Tell me why I hang it out in the empty trees. A cheap circus to glance at, an offering, a nod to the old god and his kitschy surveillance of each sparrow's quick tragedy. Check the woods back here, its cache of evidence. Under the moon's useless eye, nuthatches, juncos, sparrows, buntings litter the still woods floor, smudgy down bodies chilled to blank loss and fallen, tossed, like small purses from the boughs, into unbroken white. Each sub-zero morning, more small deaths assembled, tiny subtractions multiplied, I see, yes, how three sparrows could equal a squirrel, five juncos a good cat loved by someone, and 10, and more, and this morning, this terrible counting. What is natural in nature turns perverse, charged, pervasive, little dead birds, each not a handful, but again and again, and yes, soon the woods could be littered with children. Deep in these seamless, slow-ticking nights, I think how the world is willful, how it seeks out and reaches a stark, exclusive beauty of extreme, how cruel it is to be pure, how cold, how the birds drop lightly and vanish, how I need more blankets and simpler sleep. See, it's 15 below and falling, clouds thin fast, and here is night, with no dimension but up and all. Here is the numberless ice light of stars. I can show you Andromeda, Orion, the others, but I tell you, I know, there's not a soul up there. I'm pouring out seeds, I'm leaving a light on, but I'm no saint. This isn't charity. It's a real small something, almost nothing, almost. This is Sharon Van Sluice for Mind's Eye Radio.
So what do we do when confronted with towering problems? Well, some of us bury into the nearest comforter, but at least one of us copes. That one, in this case, is Jim Nichols.
Blow. In my face, like sand, blew that stuff which in summertime softer form is hailed the answer to all prayers and the cure of long dusty drought. Cold sidewalk, slippery and rough, my eyes squinting against the storm, I brushed away all other cares to reach my home along that route. Once there, I had to clear the way, the path where others walk their dogs. My shovel rose, as did that grit, to blow and strike my face again. Later on, I knew, I would pay for shovelfuls heavy as logs, but could not rest. I could not sit. I'd prove my worth to other men. When morning came, the clouds had fled. No storm had come. The sky was clear. Then the wind, my miserable luck, made sunlit crystals jump and blow, swirling round my foolish head, then rudely spit them in my ear. Three times it came to make me duck, three times the same, and always snow. This is Jim Nichols for Mind's Eye Radio.
So are you shaking yet? Well, let us try to warm the cockles of your heart in the second half today, when we hear about other combat and caressing methods for snuggling up to winter. Paul Thompson proves that he has the body of winter, if not the mind of winter, Wallace Stevens demands, in January 20th, 2009.
January 20th, 2009. The sun glistens on the dripping icicles hanging from the eaves, the only moisture on this cold January day. Across the snow-covered field and marsh lies the ridge of fields and trees, the terminal moraine left by the glacier 12,000 years ago. When I trudged out to the road for the newspaper this morning, I found rabbit, deer, fox tracks in the thin snow of the driveway, signs of another life unknown to us, another universe of life and death, almost as distant as Saturn and its moons. I heard an owl hoot last night. In Washington, the cheerful millions huddle against the chill in the bright sunlight, waving to their images on the big screens. On the rooftops, men exchange messages, eyes scanning the crowd, each with an automatic rifle. The president-elect sits, solemn, listening to the invocators appealing to the bright sky, asking for spring. For Mind's Eye Radio, this is Paul Thompson.
Thank you.
Margins takes on a variety of meanings when applied to the slippery slopes surrounding one's car as one tries to navigate life's tougher trails. Poet Ruth Nichols knows.
Margin. My hair floats in dry winter air. You watch it melt into the blowing clouds of snow, your hotel view. I see our white rumpled bed, inviting still. Through the ground blizzard, we drive home. On the road, drifts heave and release. Snow sweeps and clouds our path. Sun tries to melt its way through. You see a landscape like the stubble on a white leg. I watch all edges dissolve into a churning mist. You see a broken tree, one last limb leaning under the wind. This is the world, stark white against shell blue sky. We should turn. The car skids, heads toward the blank white edge of my life, but it straightens, stops. You stroke my shoulder. I stretch each hand and breathe before clutching the wheel again. We go on. Go on like this, like we so often do, dropping images into each other's minds. You sleep, and words continue in mine, a rusty, halting walk of words. I want to stop, grab a pen, hear the wind howl, hear you breathe beside me, savor that on paper. Cloud flocks drift over rolling tree-flecked snowscape, vistas and waves of snow, black ink on white. We drive on toward the margin, our car on the vast whiteness a speck, our lives minute.
Here's another poem from Ruth Nichols. Most of us would choose a puppy to cuddle up with, but Ruth Nichols takes another look at that cold, white stranger.
Cool man. Afterward, he lit his corn cob pipe, slipped out of the covers, and said I was just too hot to handle. He was looking a bit odd by then, like the moon 2 days past full. So I grabbed a handful of the wet stuff and patted it on until he was like new. The tall, silent type, he was cool as they come, never even removed his black silk hat. I watched him puffing smoke on the other side of the bed where tiger lilies and moonflowers lay last summer. I was tired of fast men, fast chat, thank you, ma'am, what's in the kitchen? Drinking milk from the jug. I lay back down, watched him wrap his scarf, pull on those old galoshes, and stump off into town. This is Ruth Nichols for Mind's Eye Radio.
Medicine writer Evie Thompson.
Wasting time. Snow piled as high as the eaves by the snowplow. More even than last year's record amount. Bitter temperatures and ice. Ah, winter. The people that went south don't know what they're missing. I started to drive to a meeting. There was a wind chill warning and very slippery roads. I thought, if I should slide in the ditch, do I want to have to wait to be rescued in this frigid cold? I turned around and went home. I put on my shearling slippers and wool socks, picked up a good book, and read. Later, When the wind died down, I sat and looked out my window. A hawk perched on an oak by the fence. After it took off, a flock of juncos, sparrows, nuthatches, and three cardinals foraged on the oaks and in the driveway. I didn't know what kind of hawk or what the birds were eating, and I wasn't going to look it up, because this was found time, not self-improvement time. It's that ultimate luxury that winter now and then provides, time to waste. I turned and looked again. The snow was several different shades of white in the late afternoon sun. This is Evie Thompson from Mind's Eye Radio.
Why, the man claims to be able to count snowflakes. I guess our only recourse is to give him the chance to show us how, as Stringlove, alias Lewis Rawl, teaches again.
The Man Who Counted Snowflakes, a winter story for children by Dr. Stringlove. In the town of Haddison, an old man named Wuss lived on Obama Road. When he retired, Mrs. Wuss told him to get a hobby, which would get him out of the house, as she was used to him being away at work. So, he decided to count blades of grass in the summer and snowflakes in the winter. The counting grass was not difficult. He counted the number of blades in a square inch, multiplied by 144 to get the number of blades in a square foot, and multiplied again by the number of square feet in his yard to get the total. This left him plenty of time to go to the park to play chess with the other men banished from their homes. The snowflakes were more of a problem. He decided to limit himself to the snow plowed into his driveway by the mayor, who drove the fire engine and snowplow. This was easy to do, since to save money, he just mounted a blade on the front of the fire truck to make the snowplow. The mayor would wave every time he went by to fill Lewis's driveway with snow. When not performing his civic duties or running for re-election, the mayor sold insurance. Wuss thought about how to count the number of snowflakes it took to block his driveway. Finally, he found that 471 snowflakes would make a cube, which was a hundredth of an inch on a side. This means that there are 471 million snowflakes in a cubic inch. He then measured a shovel full of snow to be 853 cubic inches. To find the number of snowflakes in a shovelful, he quickly did the multiplication in his head. Then he went inside and checked his answer using pencil and paper and the multiplication tables he was taught in school. He got a different answer. When he told Mrs. Wuss about this, she used her calculator and said the number he found by doing it in his head was right. He checked the calculation on paper, found a mistake, and corrected it. The final answer was the same as the others, so he decided all were right. Now all he had to do was multiply this product by the number of shovels full it took to clear his driveway, and he would have the number of snowflakes. All winter he would figure out the number of snowflakes he had had to shovel from his driveway and add it to the previous total. One day he realized that by chance he had shoveled exactly 5 quadrillion flakes. But wait, another snowflake fell on Obama Road. The mayor turned the truck around and pushed it into Wuss's driveway. That was too much. Wuss had saved his bazooka and some phosphorus grenades from the Korean War. He blew up the fire engine snowplow while the mayor was around the corner tacking up campaign posters. Then Wuish used the grenades to burn down the mayor's house. Fortunately, the children were in day school, and the mayor's wife was teaching her popular illustrated sex education class at the high school. Unfortunately, the fire spread to most of the rest of the town. When people saw the fire coming, they ran to the high school, where the mayor and his wife quickly set up a shelter. Some neighboring fire departments showed up to contain the fire and let it burn itself out. They knew better than to make it worse by pouring water on burning phosphorus. The people who lost homes were not too unhappy because the mayor had sold them plenty of insurance, and they could look forward to building nicer ones. The sheriff arrested Wuish right away, and the district attorney turned the case over to the TV news, which presumes you are guilty unless you are good-looking enough to be innocent. Wuish was convicted by the media and sentenced to work on the chain gang, which shovels snow from the mall parking lot. So now Mrs. Wuish has a house all to herself, and he gets to count snowflakes all winter. This is Dr. Stringlove, still shoveling it out for Mind's Eye Radio.
I have two poems on winter. One kind of celebrates the joy of winter and the first big blizzard of the year. And the second one is as we get into January and the days start getting longer, looking forward to spring. The first one is Accumulating Snow. It is snowing hard, but the schools are open. A crossing guard skates toward a schoolgirl stranded on the far corner in a blizzard of white chocolate. The crossing guard knows how to negotiate the drifting crosswalk. She also knows how to turn white chocolate back into snowflakes, but doesn't. The blizzard continues, and it's a delicious walk all the way to school. The second week of January. Along the streets, the snow is lost beneath exhaust and tossed out Christmas trees. And amid the freeze that January breathes into the new year, we are so holiday hungover, we don't notice that the days are getting longer and there is always a time for starting over. This is Lynn Patrick Smith for Mind's Eye Radio.
Weather is weather, the world over, and all anybody is doing about it is making it weirder. Poet and prose writer Josephine Zell catches us up with weather from England to America.
My children taught me how to handle winter. That was in the 70s when I was new to Wisconsin, and apart from one very severe one when I was still living in England, there hadn't been much winter to handle. I do remember, though, that in 1947 the entire country was snowbound, Much industry was brought to a halt, and that morning my mother had come into my room with her dramatic announcement, "It's below 32. 32 degrees Fahrenheit was her comfort limit, and we were fairly warned. So on coming to live in Milwaukee years later with my American husband and experiencing a Midwest winter, I found life very different. In no time, it seemed, I had a little girl whose radiant face at the first snowfall I can see even now. For 4-year-old kindergarten, she needed a snowsuit, and I invested in a heavy winter coat to wear to the school to meet her. Rosemary came face to face with reality when, on the way home, she suddenly sat down in the deep snow and said she could walk no farther, rather like old King Canute, the Dane, who had conquered England centuries ago and one day seated himself on a throne on the seashore, forbidding the waves to approach him. As for Rosemary, after a few obstinate moments, up she stood and from then tackled that walk with gusto. Delighted 4 years later with a little brother, Philip, born on a cold February day, Rosemary could hardly wait for him to be old enough to play with her, and especially to play in the snow. Eventually, her father and I took them with their toboggans to Old Brick Park in Madison, where a new era began. The slopes were exhilarating, so many children with their sleds or their saucers sliding down over and over again the ice-covered lake in the distance, a radiant sun above them. They would have stayed there twice as long as their father and I were prepared to stay. But it was only a short ride back home, where hot chocolate was soon ready and Sesame Street was on TV. Josephine Zell for Mind's Eye Radio.
Whether their desires concerning winter were pure as the driven snow, today's Mind's Eye Muppets bid you a warm and welcome spring. They blew their trumpets and charged into the fuzzy fray, fearlessly and fecklessly facing forecasts as foreboding as Fred the Weatherman could make them. Whether literally embracing the snowman or simply beholding the nothing that is there and the nothing that is not, were Gay Davidson Zilski, Lynn Patrick Smith, Paul Thompson, Evie Thompson, Louise Mancuso, Kathy Dodd Minor, Ruth Nichols, Jim Nichols, Fran Rawl, Louis Rawl, Guy Thorvaldsen, and Josie Zell. The show is produced by Kelly Warren and co-produced by Gay Davidson Zilski in Madison, Wisconsin. Original music by Barbara Chusett. This and past programs are posted at Radio for All, which can be found at www.radioforall.net, and that's the number 4. For more information about Mind's Eye Radio, go to www.mindseyeaudio.com. I'm Greg Willard. Till next time, best wishes from Mind's Eye Radio. Thank you.